Big show today, Sean. Huge, I think. Special guest, Henrik Lundqvist. We sat down with him in the NHL office on Monday. We're going to have that interview for you shortly, Sean. One of the most thoughtful guys in hockey. And that interview with Hank, which all the listeners are going to hear soon, Sean, I mean, you really get the picture of how thoughtful Hank is in that interview.
Look, I don't know who named him King Henrik, but when you think about a king, you think about regal. And he is regal. He's regal on the ice. He's regal off the ice. So eloquent and just reflective on everything that's happened. And it's a career that'll be celebrated on Friday with his number going to the rafters, but well beyond that. He's a legend.
I was lucky. I got to cover his entire career with the New York Rangers, starting in 2005, all the way up to 2020, and all those 15 years. So many huge moments, so many big moments for him and that team and that, you know, that window where they never won the Stanley Cup, but they came close. And every time you went to talk to Henrik Lundqvist after a game, before, you know, pregame, on an off day, he always had something to add to your coverage that made my coverage, you know, whoever it was, better of the New York Rangers. So the fans gained a better perspective. A lot of it was reflective. A lot of it was, you know, not really like the X's and O's, like Marty Brodeur was terrific at breaking down shooters and things along those lines. That wasn't Hank's MO. He was more of the, you know, the inner analysis of what was going on in his mind and in the team's mind. And that to me was part of what made him special, is just that thoughtfulness that he had. And then, yeah, of course. And you know, the royalty, you know, that really he carried himself with the nickname King Henrik, but what a career. And you talk to people about him, the competitiveness, the competitor in him, everybody I talked to and doing stories leading up to this night, he's going to get his number 30 retired on Friday night before they play the Minnesota Wild. Competitive drive, work ethic. Those are the things that came up the most about Henrik Lundqvist. And he even brings it up. You'll hear it in the interview. All the stuff that, you know, you see and all the stuff that he has, none of it mattered more to him than being a competitor and testing himself.
Look, I don't want to give away the interview, but to me, right, the most amazing thing that he said in it was the fear, right, that drove him every time he walked into Madison Square Garden, whether it was an exhibition game, preseason, whatever it might be, game in the middle of January that many people thought meant nothing. Like that pressure to perform drove him. And all the greats have that, right? Like it doesn't matter what you're playing for. It's the biggest game you're ever going to play in, and you owe it to your teammates and to your fans. And that's what he lived in. And this interview is going to be the highlight of NHL.com's coverage of King Henrik, but it's not all. Dan Rosen, my co-host, or the host that I guest on every time, did a fantastic job of covering Henrik. And I hope that you can tune into NHL.com and read some of the stories that he's done. They've started running now and they will run through Friday. And Dan and a host of others will be there on Friday to document what should be an unbelievable night in the Garden.
Well, you're far too kind, but no, it should be a big night at Madison Square Garden. And Henrik, you know, will hear the chance again. I got to ask you though, Sean, does not winning the Stanley Cup knock him down a peg? Do you think that does that for a goalie of his stature and what he was able to accomplish, that he came close, he got to, you know, he got there in 2014. Does not winning it knock him down a peg, or do you not blame him for the fact that they didn't win it?
Well, I guess it depends on who you're asking, right? Like if you're asking a general hockey fan, or if you're asking a Rangers fan, or, you know, what group you're asking. To me, they've won one cup since I've been alive.
Yeah, since 1940.
And, you know, I'm 53 years old. So the odds were against him to win. And he brought him closer than anybody else had, other than Richter, who won it. So I don't know that you would hold it against him. I think it's a product of the team that he had. He didn't join a powerhouse. He made them into a powerhouse for a few years, and he was the backbone of that team. I mean, let's be honest. Like, the reason that they were that competitive was because every night they knew they were going to get an all-star performance out of their goaltender. So I don't know, you know, that I would hold it against them. I mean, the jokes are there, and you know, rival fans love to have a good laugh at it, but he did everything he could, and the numbers suggest that he's one of the all-time greats when it comes to goaltending, a first ballot Hall of Famer in my mind.
Yeah, I think so too. And that's, I guess, the question, you know, about the Stanley Cup is, does that hurt his Hall of Fame status on the, like, the first time in, you know, his first year of eligibility? Does not winning, because you know how difficult it is for goaltenders to get into the Hall of Fame. I mean, it's not just like a run of goalies that normally get in. I don't think it should, though. I don't think it should, because to your points, I mean, he was the best player on that team every single season he played. Like, every single season, he was the best player. There was never a guy that came in that you were like, well, that guy's carrying them right now. It not the case at all. Talk to Rangers fans and what they think of Dan Girardi and Mark Stahl. You know, I mean, those guys were solid NHL defensemen, prone to mistakes at times, and they made them. The ones that made that, where the puck went in the net, a lot of times it stood out because you're like, well, Hank, you know, Hank normally would stop that, or, you know what I mean? They were good players and they were a big part of the core of that team, but they're not Hall of Fame defensemen. He didn't play with a Hall of Fame defenseman. You know, he didn't play with a Hall of Fame forward. He is the Hall of Famer on that team. And that's why I think he should be first year eligibility, go right into the Hall of Fame, because for 15 years, he was the best player on the team.
Yeah, the only thing that would hurt him is he grew up in a generation of really good goalies, and he had one across the river that outshone him, mm-hmm. that was better than him. And there's no shame in that. Marty might be the best goalie that ever played the game. So if you're not as good as him, where's the shame in that? You could be the second best, right? Like, it's just he grew up and came of age in a golden era for goalies to a degree. So I don't know how it'll shake out, but, you know, I didn't cover him as much as you, but I had the opportunity to cover him. I covered him at the Olympics, the World Cup of Hockey, tons of Ranger games. Just a pleasure. Like, that's the only way to put it. Like, this is not always a pleasurable job. Most of the time it is, but sometimes it's not. But it was always a pleasurable job dealing with Henrik. And I don't say that as like, oh, he made my job easier. I say that as he understood what his job was, and that it extended beyond the ice, and it extended to the reporters, it extended to the fans, it extended to the community. And he did all of those things. He did them willingly, and he did them because he wanted to.
Yeah, 100%. And you can hear that in that interview. We should play it right now. You know, I mean, it was that good. So hopefully you take time to listen to all this, because he's a very thoughtful man and has a lot of reflective thoughts on what this whole thing means to him to have his jersey number go up, number 30, to the rafters at Madison Square Garden. Here's that interview with Henrik Lundqvist.
Henrik, thanks for joining us. So this honor, having your jersey number retired by the Rangers, have it go up in Madison Square Garden, just what does it mean to you? What kind of impact is it having on you?
Yeah, you know, I keep getting that question, what it means. And it's, you know, part of it feels a little surreal that it's actually happening. I was there the other day, and they took me up to the suites where my family and friends going to sit on Friday, and I walk out and the banner was right there. Not my banner, right. All the other banners. And, you know, it was just such a cool moment to think about it. And every time you get a text message right now, or someone sends a video or something, it takes you back. It brings you back to, you know, that year or a moment, and you start thinking about the teammates and the, all the players, you know, the different memories we created. And that's what's so fun. It's been so fun about leading up to this, you know, moment. I've had an opportunity to think about so many things about my career and kind of relive it a little bit with friends reaching out or former teammates, and it makes you realize how, you know, I'm so grateful for, you know, the whole journey. It was such a, I don't know how to explain it, but all the friendships, all the memories we created together as teams, but also with the fans, you know, that's something that I relive right now and makes me smile every time. It feels really good.
Have you thought about the process at all? I'm sure when you came and you stood in Madison Square Garden for the first time, you looked up at those numbers and you probably wondered who some of those people were, and you learned as you went along, and it was the fabric of who the Rangers are. And now, for future generations, you're going to be in that conversation.
Yeah, no, it's even now when you say it like that, it's crazy to think about. But I was lucky enough to be there for, you know, many of the retirement ceremonies. And something you understand pretty quickly when you come and play for the New York Rangers is that history is important. You know, original six team, and they take a lot of pride in their history, as they should. And it's very cool to be an active player to experience it. But it's also great to see all the retired guys come back, players that play for 2 years, 1 year, or for 14, 15 years. They all mean something to the organization, and they do such a good job with it. So it's been awesome to experience that as a current player or active player, and now I'll be on the other side of it. And, you know, we're sitting. I can almost see the garden from here, and that place has meant so much to me. Been so inspired by the building itself and what it means to walk in there every time, the pressure. I felt so alive in that building. At times, yeah, it's hard to deal with that type of pressure sometimes. But I loved it. I felt very alive walking in there, okay, here we go. That type of feeling. Yeah. If it's a preseason game or game seven, that pressure was always there. And it was just awesome to feel it.
You mentioned it in your first answer about, you know, people reaching out and getting, you know, brings you back to that moment, right? What are some of your favorite moments? Do you have some favorite moments of your career? Any specific games or moments that you just say that you now are looking back on because you can have that perspective of being like, wow, that was it right there. Yeah.
To be really honest, it's not one moment. It's more, I remember when my time ended with the team, how much time I spent thinking about, it was more years of having fun with teammates. And the, you know, you start thinking about the first few years, who you play with. And then there was, you know, a lot of these young guys started to get older, but we were a core group there for many years. Mm-hmm. And we experienced so many things together and relationships. And that's what I thought about and made me really grateful that I got to experience that. So it was more that, to be honest, than one moment. And the fact that I got to play for 15 years and I wanted to have a role where I had an impact, and I felt like the Rangers really, you know, they gave me that opportunity to play that role, and I took a lot of pride in that, to have an important role. And to me, obviously, you play for yourself, you play for your teammates, but then you start playing for the fans, you play for the organization, and you take a lot of pride in how you, you know, manage that in a way.
So you've answered 2-3 questions. Clearly you're a very good public speaker. have you worked on your speech yet? Are you a off the cuff kind of guy? Will you have prepared?
Yeah, well, normally I don't like writing down what I'm about to say. I like to just wing it. I was at an event 2 months ago, and it was funny. The people around the table, they were, what are you going to say? Have you prepared something? It's like, no, I'm just going to wing it. And there was 4 people before me that was going to speak, and it was probably the 3 best speeches I've heard in a long time. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, they were so prepared, and it was so good. And I was sitting at the table. It's like, what am I going to say here? But I went up and I winged it a little bit, but it went okay, I guess. But I think for Friday, there's so much going on. There's so much, you know, this is different. So I'm probably going to prepare something for Friday, and then we'll see how it goes. But I don't think I'm comfortable of winging it on Friday. I need to prepare something. Yeah.
Talk about feeling alive, right? Winging it, right. on your retirement night in front of 18,000 people.
Yeah, but you know, the big thing for me is to really enjoy it and not stress about anything. Leading up to this, obviously there's some planning. We have about 60, 65 people from Sweden flying over, and it's not just one night. We have three, 4 nights of things happening and celebrating and because it's a moment where, you know, me and my family, we get an opportunity to share this with people that they've been there, you know, along on the ride. And that's going to be very special, to share the moment with everyone that's in so many different ways been part of it.
You mentioned teammates, and I do want to ask you about teammates, because they were all part of that ride, yeah, too. Several of them, you know, played a number of games with you, were part of that core.
Yeah.
But I talked to a number of them, and the same things came up when I asked about you, and it's the competitiveness, the work ethic, the drive, that insatiable desire to win. You played because you loved it. You played for the passion of it. You mentioned, you know, for the fans. What continued to drive? Like, how did you get to that level of competitiveness in a practice in mid-January? How did you drive yourself that way?
I don't know. It was just that important. You know, people might think, you know, the suits or the cars or whatever. But in the end, that didn't matter at all. You know, what mattered to me was the competition and measure yourself against the best all the time. And I got that opportunity every day playing in this league. You know, and that's why I wanted to come here and play, to measure yourself against the best. And if it was a game, yeah, I had an opportunity to measure myself against my teammates. Or when it was a game, it was, you know, you try to win, obviously, and make a difference. And that, I felt that since I was 5 years old. It was important all the time. And, mm-hmm. and that's why I, you know, try to play. After I was done here in New York, I really struggled to see myself play anywhere else. It was hard. Like, at first I told my wife and closest friends that, no, I can't do it. I'm not going to go anywhere. This is the only place I want to play. But then, you know, I started going to the rink and I really enjoyed it. And it's like, wow, I really love this game. I want to compete. I want to continue to measure myself and see what I can do. So that's why I decided to go and try playing Washington. And then in the end, you know, the heart said no, and it was not meant to be. It was crazy how it happened and the whole experience I went through. But it's funny how I struggled for such a long time if I should go somewhere else and play and or not. And then the decision was made for me. So, you know, things happen and you just got to roll with it. And that's something throughout my career, I was very, you know, I needed control, everything, preparation and yeah, everything I did. It was a purpose behind everything. But in a situation like that, you just got to let go and, you know, wherever life takes you in a way that was a new experience for me.
Yeah, not to make light of it, but your heart was always in New York, I guess.
Yeah,
right?
It was. Yeah. It really was. And yeah, it became symbolic to me a little bit the way it happened. And I was definitely excited to go to Washington. Family was excited and they treated me really nice when I came there. But again, it was just not meant to be. And since then, I've had obviously a lot of time to think about my time here in New York and what that meant to me. And yeah, just very, very grateful.
You mentioned competing, and the NHL is so much about rivalries, right? We talk all the time, the Rangers and the Devils or whoever it is. But individually, did you have rivals? Did you have guys that you looked across from when you played and said, this is the guy I want to measure myself against. This is the guy. This is the test.
Well, you knew every time you played the best players, you knew it was going to be a challenge. You know, playing Pittsburgh and Crosby and Malkin always a challenge. Playing Washington with Backstrom and Ovi, that was always a challenge. And we faced him a lot in the playoffs too. And that created something. And but it felt like every team had, you know, one or two guys that really stood out. So it was always a challenge, obviously. But with those guys, with Ovi and Crosby for so many years, playing so many games against them, that was always a little extra, I think.
I mentioned teammates before, so I did want to ask you about them.
Yeah.
You know, like Mark Stahl played the most games with you. Dan Girardi was right there. Ryan McDonough was right there. There's a number of other guys, Derek Stepan, Ryan Callahan, Matt Zuccarello, who I know you're close with. But those three defensemen, they were diving all over the place for you, you know? What goalies don't always get that. You know, players don't always get that. The opportunity to play so many games with a certain number of players in the core. What did those guys mean to you?
Well, we touched it earlier that all the memories, everything we experienced, we grew up together in a way. We were all young. We came in pretty much at the same time. And, you know, that makes me really happy thinking back of that time. And more than just one game or a big victory in an important game, I'm more grateful actually to think back of what we shared for so many years, because we did the journey together in a way. I guess that came in at the same time, sort of, and I grew up together in the city. So yeah, I saw Valley gave me an iPad the other day with some messages from former teammates, and Girardi was one of the first ones in there, and it kind of took me off guard a little bit with the video, but it really brought me back, and it was, you know, a great feeling to see him and him talking to me. And it's been so many good teams, you know, I had the opportunity to play on, but those guys that you brought up, those are the guys that I had an opportunity to play the most games with, and obviously we have shared a lot of fun memories together.
You talked about how you couldn't see yourself playing for another team, and then you kind of got around to it, and then it didn't happen. What's it like now watching this edition of the Rangers, watching Shesterkin play goalie, and watching them have a fair modicum of success this year? For you, as you kind of divest yourself from being an active player to the next stage of your life, is it kind of a weird thing to watch this thing happen?
I don't know if it's weird. Obviously, I'm very impressed with the team this year, and Igor and the entire team, how well they're playing. And, you know, back when they told me they were going to do a rebuild, this was what I was picturing. The only difference is that I was going to be part of it myself. That was my plan, you know. And I was, the way I was feeling physically, and my plan was to play until 41, 42. If I had that chance, I would do it because I still love the game. So part of me, you know, I had my moments where I like, it's too bad. I didn't get an opportunity to play more because I love it so much. But then pretty quickly I move into, you know, the grateful phase where I'm just happy with what I got and not what I didn't get, you know. But it's still pretty fresh, even though it's been, a year and a half now since I played a game. I feel so connected to the organization, and I will always feel connected. It doesn't matter if I work at 33rd Street or not. You know, I will always feel connected because they were such a big part of my life, an important piece of my life for such a long time.
Well, part of your connection now, too, is you're doing some analyst work on MSG in the studio. What do you think? I mean, do you like it? Is it something you enjoy doing, being a part of that and speaking from your perspective on what's going on in the game at the time?
I do. To me, I want to stay connected, but in a different way. And that's a great opportunity for me now to stay connected with the organization, and it might change down the road how I want to be connected. But right now, it's a perfect fit for me. And you also realize when you play team sports, what's really important, and it's the people. And to have an opportunity to work with guys that you really enjoy, and I've known Steve and John for a long time. So I just try to have fun with it. And I'm doing other things as well, you know, projects in Sweden and here in New York. And to me right now, it's about surrounding yourself with people that you have fun with and that can inspire you and do fun things. That's what I want to do. The ultimate goal for me right now is just to be happy.
That should be the ultimate goal for everybody. Yeah. So good luck with that. I know one of the other things that you're doing is the Olympics are coming up, and you're going to do some work for Swedish TV on the Olympics.
Yeah, I'm going back try the other side of an Olympics. Work with Discovery in Sweden, and we're going to talk about the games. And obviously, the plan was to talk about the NHL guys playing in the tournament. That will not happen now. But it will be fun. I look forward to it. And you know, when you're on a set, it becomes a team as well. You work together. And I've always been a fan of the game. I always enjoyed watching the game. And I think the game is really moving in a great direction. There's so much creativity right now. And players, they have so much confidence. The new generation, they're trying things we didn't see 10 years ago. And they're just pushing it forward. The development of the game, the speed, the technique, the biggest thing I think is the mindset that they allow themselves to try things. And I think for a long time the game was played a certain way, and because that was the way we should play it. And now I think it's changing a little bit, and I think it's cool to see.
Well, it definitely is, and it's going to be cool to see Friday night your number go up. So congratulations on that, and good luck with the work with Swedish TV, MSG, everything else you're doing. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
So as we said, Sean, that was terrific stuff from Henrik Lundqvist. Really great to hear all that reflective and that perspective that he has and how much this means to him. And for more, obviously, you can go to our coverage. Sean, you popped it at the top. I'll pop it now on NHL.com. Lots of coverage on Henrik Lundqvist and the jersey retirement night, Friday night, prior to the game against the Minnesota Wild at Madison Square Garden. So let's move on. Let's go to the Philadelphia Flyers. First, the good. Keith Yandel. Sean, 965 consecutive games played, breaks Doug Jarvis's Ironman record for the National Hockey League. Not only is Keith Yandel the Ironman in the NHL, he also might be one of the funniest men in the National Hockey League. So there is that too. But it's almost unfathomable to me that a guy can play 965 consecutive games in this league with all the bumps and bruises and bangs up, you know, you can get. And now through COVID too, he does it, which is, it's just fantastic.
More than half the league has had COVID. And somehow he avoided it, right?
It's amazing. Like,
but you know, you mentioned as an aside, like, that he's one of the funniest guys in the league, and you kind of threw it away. But I don't think that's the case. Like, I think that's a huge part of who he is and what he's able to do, because he just kind of takes everything in stride, right? Like, and nothing bothers him. So on that side, he's just kind of able to mentally deal with it, because it's as much mental as it is physical, right? I mean, how many times have we seen a player sat down at the end of the year when the playoffs are coming? Well, he needs a rest, he needs a break, he needs this, he needs that. And you know, that's never happened either. And as the streak got longer, you know, it became less of a possibility. Although let's remember, he was almost a healthy scratch in Florida at the start of the year last year. On at the rink, no less.
on the record.
Yeah. And then he played and the streak was saved. So, you know, you got to survive the wrath of coaches. You got to survive suspension. There's so many things that you have to survive. It is unfathomable. I can't imagine covering 965 games in a row. And that's a lot less taxing than playing in them. And it's still difficult. So all the props in the world to him. It was a big deal. I think it should have been a bigger deal, just because it's such a testament to the commitment it takes to play this game.
And I don't want to hear this, the nonsense that I've heard a little bit of, well, you know, I mean, Keith Yandle's not, you know, he's not the most physical player. He's not the most, you know, he doesn't play in the most contact areas and this, that, and the other. 965 games, man. I mean, you can get a puck off the face in one of those games and be out for weeks. Like, it's just, it's luck. It's a lot of luck, but it's a lot. It's toughness to be able to play in all those games. It's competitiveness. It's toughness. And not only that, you know, especially in those first, you know, earlier part of the streak, you got to be playing at a high level for the coach to continue to put you in the lineup, right? Yeah. I mean, that alone, he has played at a high level for 965 games.
Adam Kilman on our staff did a great job covering it. And the story he wrote leading up to it, you know, there were chances where Keith wasn't going to play. And there was one where the trainers were in the hotel room with him for till 4 a.m. trying to get his ankle right so he could play, and he was able to get his boot on. Anybody that's had an ankle injury playing hockey, you know, the biggest, any kind of foot injury, the biggest thing is once you take your skate off, it's all over. Your foot swells up, you can't get it back in your skate, and you're done. So, and the guy right, let's not forget the guy right behind him, you're going to make the same argument about, right? It's Phil Kessel. He's only 30 games behind him, I think, and would be much more in the news if Keith wasn't doing it at the same time. The same arguments were made about him, right? He's not the most physical or engaged guy. He plays on the perimeter. It doesn't matter. It's a nasty game. There's mishaps that happen all the time away from the play. The puck, like you said, you get hit in an ankle, you get hit in the face, you get hit anywhere, right? You're going to sit out. So nobody should denigrate what Keith's accomplished. Yeah. And his stats too, like other people are like, well, look at his numbers. He's dragging down the team, you know, just to keep his record alive. Again, not the case. Look, the last coach at Quenneville in Florida was ready to pull the plug if he thought it was the best for the team. So would the Flyers. Like, even with a public relations nightmare that it might be, you are always doing what's best for the team. And right now on that Philadelphia team, which is not going very well, Keith Yandle is the only option.
He's the least of their problems. You know, like, let's be honest. Like, he is the least of their problems. And that is a team with lots of problems. So, as good as, and that was the positive, the Keith Yandle news was a positive. And I think you said it should have gotten more coverage. If they were going better, it probably would have. But the biggest story around the Flyers right now is the 13 straight losses, you know, which is just incredible. A franchise record, 13 straight losses for a team that not long ago, Sean, had Stanley Cup aspirations, and they had the goaltender who was going to be the dominant goalie in the National Hockey League for years. And the, you know, it's just fallen apart. Some of it has to do with injuries. I understand that, but it has completely fallen apart there. And I think really the only solution now for them is to look who they can move out and kind of try to start it over again. Like you know, and the number one name you'll see and hear and read about is Claude Giroux. And he's a UFA to be at the end of the season, 34 years old. Sean, it makes absolutely no sense for the Philadelphia Flyers to keep him beyond, you know, to keep him beyond the trade deadline this season. And to me, it makes absolutely no sense for Claude Giroux to not want to go somewhere else. This is a guy, he has a no move clause. I don't know the entire, you know, clause and what it reads and all that, but he has a no move clause. So he's in control here, but he wants a new contract. If he were able to get moved to a team that's going to contend and be in the playoffs, Claude Giroux can continue to open up some eyes when it matters most, and he can increase his value on the next contract that he gets if he gets traded and plays in the playoffs.
All of that's true. And look, the new wrinkle that's happened the last few years is he can always go back.
He can go back, sure.
Right? Like, Ray Bourque was in the same shoes. And when he was playing for the Bruins, and in the end, he got traded to Colorado, and eventually he won the cup, not the year that he got traded. And the Bruins came out and said, we owed it to Ray Bourque to trade him so he could win a cup, which is the most horrible thing I think you can ever say to your fan base, that we needed to trade a player so he could win the Stanley Cup. But whatever. Uh-huh. Like, I think Claude's in the same place, right? He deserves that opportunity if he wants it, right? And to me, if you love the franchise and you know, you want to be a part of it, you want to be a part of the orange and black and all of that, like, you can still love the franchise and go someplace else, because you can always come back now. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no stigma anymore of leaving and coming back. It's happened numerous times, and you would help the franchise out immeasurably. And there's a benefit for you too. It's not like you're going and you're playing for a team that can't contend for the Stanley Cup. You're going to a Colorado, let's say, you know, or a Boston, or somebody who, you know, has a legitimate shot if you add that into the mix to win a Stanley Cup. So it'll be interesting to see. There'll be a lot of posturing between now and then, trying to drive the price up and you know, see what happens. But I would have to imagine that Claude Giroux is going to be maybe the biggest name at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I would think so. And you talk about going back, he could also, it's very possible too that he goes back and they don't give him the captaincy again. You know how hard sometimes it is to be the captain of the Philadelphia Flyers in that market, especially when the team's not going well. It's all his fault. It's not his fault, right? But maybe they go back, he goes back and he's not the captain anymore, and he can just kind of play and it'll be a little bit easier on him. But we'll see. I think it makes absolute perfect sense for them to move him. It makes no sense for them to keep him. It makes no sense for him to want to stay for at least beyond this season. His value can increase. There's no question about it. And there's other guys there that they can move out. Yandel's one of them. You know, I mean, he's a UFA to be too. Justin Braun's another one. You know, I mean, there's hockey trades that they should be looking at too. And I don't mean, when I say that, it's not guys who would go as rental players. You know, Travis Konecny, Scott Laughton. To me, everything's on the table for the Philadelphia Flyers for the way it's been going for them.
Look, not only have they lost 13 games and they blew a 2-0 lead last night to lose the 13th game, which is just, you know, salt in the wounds, but they've lost 10 in a row earlier this year. So they've had multiple double-digit losing streaks. So clearly what they have is not working. Virtually anything should be on the table. The one thing that I don't think is on the table or shouldn't be on the table, and you may not agree with me, but I don't think the goalie's on the table. He hasn't been as good as advertised, but you need to wait. With young goalies, you need to wait, and you need to say, we think this kid's going to be really good, you know, Hart, and we need to wait it out.
No, I agree with that. He should not be on the table, but everything else maybe should be on the table. And look, you know, we'll see where it goes from there. Another team, a team that's probably looking for a goalie. How about the Edmonton Oilers, right? Back-to-back games now, Sean. We talk a lot about the Oilers on the podcast because they're an interesting team with two of the best players in the league and not much else going on. And then they were really struggling. But hey, two wins in a row now against Calgary on Saturday and Vancouver Tuesday night, that they came back from 2-0 deficits to get the win. A little bit of life now for the Edmonton Oilers. And, you know, we talk about goalies. They still are in the market for it. They should be in the market for it. Go back, by the way, last week we had Kevin Woodley, who writes the Unmasked column for us on NHL.com, our goalie guru. Go back and listen to that one, because Kevin Woodley does a great job breaking down all the goaltending storylines going on around the league, including with Edmonton. So definitely encourage you to listen to that. But how about the Oilers, man? I mean, a little bit of life can go a long way for them.
Sure. You're grasping at straws at this point, right? Like, anything is a positive for them. You know, they play Nashville next on Thursday, and I think that's a test, right? Like, do that against them, right? I mean, look, Battle of Alberta, always a nice win. So you take that for what it is. They beat Vancouver. Vancouver had like their sixth string goalie in.
He was making saves though.
Dude, Spencer, he made Martin, like 40 something.
Good.
He made like 40 something saves.
Yeah.
And like, we were one step away from maybe Kevin Woodley being in goal or being the e-bug, because they're so far down their list because of COVID. That Spencer Martin's been around for 5 years and this was like the third game that he's played, and nothing against him. He was ridiculous last night, you know, to the point where Connor McDavid, who actually played against him in minor hockey in the GTHL, you know, the Greater Toronto Hockey League, and then a little bit in juniors, was like, oh, I remember that kid, and I always thought he would be here, and sometimes it takes a little longer for goalies, you know, but he was unbelievable last night. 47 saves, like I said, and it was almost as good in his first game, which was Friday, when he made 33 saves against the Florida Panthers. So maybe the Oilers will trade for him.
maybe they will. But I think what was interesting, you know, a good point there is, though, they made him make 47 saves, you know, like, and I think that's a big part of this, is that Edmonton needs confidence. The Oilers, they need to something, anything. We talk, you mentioned it's grasping at straws. It is grasping at straws, but they need to grasp at those straws to try to dig them their way out of it. They're not out of this thing. They're not playing well. You know, I mean, you go down 2-0 back-to-back games. It's not where you want to be, right? You climb back, fine. The offense is coming from different places, including Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid, but they're getting some goal. Like Evan Bouchard had 2 on the power play against Calgary, right? So that's a good thing. It's grasping, but they need to do that. They need to build some confidence. Maybe they can do that off of a couple of wins like that. Can we dive into the mailbag a little bit? The mailbag, my mailbag runs on NHL.com. It's up right now, Wednesday. And I got a question, Sean, about the Red Wings. We don't talk a lot about the Red Wings on the podcast. And they're an up-and-coming team. We'll see where they go from here. They're out of that top 8 in the East. Looks pretty set right now. Unless the Islanders keep winning, maybe they can climb in. I highly doubt it, though. But the Red Wings, I got a question about what they might do at the deadline and if John Klingberg is in their future. So before we get even hit on Klingberg, the Red Wings, Sean, is Steve Yzerman a GM to watch? Remember, he pulled the Anthony Mantha trade out of nowhere last year, right? So is Steve Yzerman a GM we should be keeping our eye on? Because, well, I think we always should be keeping our eye on Steve Yzerman, but you know, do you think he could has something else up his sleeve here that we don't see coming?
Of course he does. And we might not see it because it might not happen, but you know, he's somewhere on the chessboard that we're not even looking at this point, right? We're looking at where the queen is, and all of a sudden this pawn's coming up the gutter and it's checkmate, and you're like, oh my god, how did that happen? That pretty much describes my chess career, by the way. We should be thinking about what he's going to do. I don't know about Klingberg. I think the market is going to be crazy for Klingberg. And does he really help that team? I think obviously they have a number one in Moritz Seider, you know, and he's going to continue to develop. I like Roenick. I think he's serviceable, you know, another offensive kind of guy. They need a stay-at-home defenseman, in my opinion. There's tons he could do. And look, I'll tell you the thing that I'm wondering about is this: when he unloads Zadina, mm-hmm. right? That was a guy who was supposed to be at the front of this, right? The Renaissance, right? You had Larkin, who came in early and was going to spearhead the whole thing. You had Bertuzzi, and then you had this big push with Raymond and Seider and those guys coming in, and now you're there. And the guy that's supposed to be a huge part of this is Filip Zadina, and he's nowhere to be found. Dude has 4 goals in 40 games this year. He's a minus 17. I think the talent's there. Does he need a fresh start? And what's the market? You know, what are other GMs looking at? Because he was in demand, you know, in his draft year, he was considered one of the best players in the world, and the talent's there, and talent doesn't fall off. But, you know, at 22, does he need to change his scenery, and what can you possibly get for him? You know, he's only got 19 goals in 125, 26 games, something like that. So he hasn't delivered yet. But again, you know, like we talked about Carter Hart, it's tough to give up on talent.
Well, you got to get talent in return. And I think of what Steve Yzerman, you know, he's been in this situation before with the Lightning with Jonathan Drouin, right? I mean, he was a supremely talented player that was still very young in his career, high draft pick, highly touted. Would he be the number one pick that year? Would he not? I mean, he was, and I think he ended up 3, if I'm right about that, 2 or 3. And they traded him, you know, because it just wasn't working out. And yeah, Zadina is one that I look at and say, that's the guy that Yzerman could move for what he believes is something better, or at least a better fit for what the model that they're trying to build there. Another one, and I don't think it's off the table. Well, first off, I think adding Klingberg mid-season is off the table. Like, he's a UFA to be at the end of the season. It doesn't make sense. Could they go back to Klingberg in free agency? Yes, I think that is a possibility. And I mentioned that in my mailbag. I wouldn't go more than 5 years, but I think the Red Wings are in a position where they can offer him a little bit more money over a shorter term contract. So that could be something interesting to look at. Swedish connection there. Nicholas Lidström is back with Detroit. So there is something there, but not for now. It doesn't make any sense for them to add John Klingberg. They're not going anywhere this season. You know, it's not happening for them this season. But another one I look at as a, and again, the Mantha one came out of nowhere. We didn't see it. What about Tyler Bertuzzi? Tyler Bertuzzi has one more year on his deal, and he is at a high level right now. So his value has to be pretty high. One more year on his deal before he's an unrestricted free agent at 27 or 28 years old. Does Steve Yzerman say, I'm going to move a guy like this right now before I have to pay him bigger money when he might then tail off a little bit? You know, I don't know. It's certainly, that's a move I can see Steve Yzerman making. That's a move I can see for the Red Wings.
I guess. I mean, you make a fine argument to why it could be made. At some point, I think if you're going to contend and you're going to be a team that is going to be in that mix, you need to have a culture, right? And you need to have players that understand what that culture is. Again, you look at the Capitals, you look at the Golden Knights, you look at the Bruins. There's identifiable cultures there because the players have stayed for so long, the main players, right? And I think Bertuzzi is developing into that player. You know, back-to-back 20-goal seasons. He's got 19 this year in 34 games. He's a guy who, to me, seems to be hitting his prime. And the reason that you invest in players and you draft players and you develop them is so you have them when they're at their prime. And that's where I kind of feel like Tyler is, right? He's that guy who, you know, developed a little bit slower than maybe people expected, and but now he's where you've always envisioned him to be, and unless the bounty is ridiculous, you keep him. You know, 3 years ago you trade him because you're so far away.
Mm-hmm.
But now you're not. Now, you know, you look at this year, they were right in the mix for a while, and then injuries and other teams pulled away from them. In another year, are they not in that mix? I think they are. And I think you remove yourself a little bit from it if you keep subtracting your core guys.
No, and that's a fair argument. That makes sense. I just looked at his contract and where he is in that right now and his value right now. And I think it's not off the table, but you make a good point. Like, you got to keep guys. You got to you got to build around some guys.
And now he'll get traded because.
All right, now he'll be traded tomorrow.
Because,
right?
I made that point, and I'm nowhere near as smart as Steve Yzerman, so I'm sure he'll be traded now. You should put it on the big board as a done deal.
By the way, we mentioned John Klingberg, right? This occurred to me. Joe Pavelski is another one, and I brought him up in the mailbag. You know, when somebody asked me a question about the Rangers and a need for a top six right wing, which they do have a need for that. And I'm looking at Joe Pavelski and I'm like, man, that would be a great fit for the Rangers. He's another pending UFA. The Dallas Stars have won 4 games in a row. They're right there. They're in the mix for a playoff spot. We've seen it time and again. All you got to do is get in, right? Especially if you get good goaltending. They're an interesting team to watch here in the next month and a half too. 2 months.
Yeah. They came out at 8 to get all the way to the Stanley Cup final. So, you know, I saw him last night live. We went to the game, my son and I and a couple of his friends. And, you know, they came out fast on the road.
Mm-hmm.
15 seconds in the first period, they scored. 16 seconds in the second period, they scored. The Devils didn't put up much of a fight against them last night. And the win before that was against the Philadelphia Flyers, who we just talked about. So I might discount the 4 in a row, but you beat who's put in front of you. But Joe Pavelski, it's unbelievable. Like, I was happy I went to the game last night because I got to see that. And I don't know how many more times, you know, you get to see him do what he does. But, and he's a playoff guy. Like, the 2 goals he scored against the Devils, they were playoff goals. He's 4 feet in front of the goalie, taking a hit, you know, being where he needed to be. He's a guy that's going to excel in the playoffs. He's a Corey Perry with more talent.
Yeah, I agree. And who does he excel in the playoffs with? Is it Dallas? Do they believe that they're a playoff team? Or do they say to themselves before March 21st, we're going to move him? And then I think whoever he is a top priority for any team that needs help, you know, anywhere in their top nine and certainly on their power play as well. So that'll be interesting to watch. Before we leave, there is some sad news we got to bring up. Happened last week. Clark Gillies, legendary New York Islander, Hall of Famer, four-time Stanley Cup champion. He passed away, 67 years old. Darren Millard had Chico Resch, a former teammate of Clark Gillies, with the Islanders on his podcast, The Chirp. Also had John Hines. That's going to be coming up. It's coming out today, I believe, Wednesday. And Chico was almost near tears, I was told, you know, during the interview, speaking about Clark Gillies. And he became a legend for the Islanders, and then he became one of Long Island's own. You know, he stayed there. I think he's Saskatchewan born and bred, and then he comes to Long Island and he becomes a Long Islander. And really just sad news to hear of the passing of Clark Gillies.
Horrible news. And he's from Moose Jaw, Dan. I don't know how you couldn't remember that.
I said from Moose Jaw. That's good enough.
Yeah, he's from Moose Jaw. And when one of the funniest things that he used to say is when he was asked, where is Moose Jaw? And he would say it's 6 feet from the moose's, you know what? But look, Clark he's an unbelievable player. And I go back to that first Islander Cup, and I was a young lad growing up in New England. The Bruins were my team. Terry O'Reilly was my guy. They played in the playoffs. Gilly scored the overtime winner. I want to say in game one. Game two, he fought Terry O'Reilly twice. Game three, he fought Terry O'Reilly twice. Absolute wars. And he got the better of Terry O'Reilly, who was my guy, and broke my heart. And then he fought Al Secord in game five, who was another rugged, rugged dude, and pretty much set the tone. If you go back and you talk to all those Islanders, they were like, that's when we knew, like, we could do what we wanted. And you know, the coverage that we did, Brian Compton talked to Bourne from that team, and they were both from Saskatchewan, and, you know, very close. Their families, you know, lived right next to, it became family, but they lived right next to each other on Long Island, both Canadian boys. And then, you know, Dave Stubbs did something with Trottier, that, you know, column that would pretty much leave you in tears about, you know, how Trottier felt about him. He just engendered this loyalty and this love, and he radiated positivity and made everybody, you know, you talk to anybody and they're like, I felt like I was part of his orbit. And I think that's maybe the greatest gift any human can have, but certainly an athlete, because you're put in a place where you're alone above everybody all the time, right? You're kind of worshiped. He's a star athlete. He's won the Stanley Cup. He's done this. And the ones who can kind of welcome in everybody back in and be like, hey, you're part of this too. And you're part of who I am. And I'm going to bring you into my world for however short a period of time it is. Those are the people that truly get it. And from everything, you know, I've talked to Clark Gillies once or twice at alumni things and all-star games and whatever you want to do. But for people that dealt with him on a regular time, like I think that's his greatest gift, is his ability to just make everybody feel comfortable and important around him.
Yeah, very well said. And I don't think I ever had a chance to talk with Clark Gillies or interview him, but the other night at Madison Square Garden, Gerard Gallant, the Rangers coach, was asked about Clark Gillies, and Gallant said, he was my guy. That was my team, and he was my guy. That's who I wanted to be. I wanted to be Clark Gillies. He said, I never really knew him personally, met him here and there, and Gallant worked for the Islanders. He coached for the Islanders for a little bit, but it was, you know, he's just like, growing up, I wanted to be Clark Gillies. And then he goes, fight and score. Who doesn't want to do that? So there's a lot of stories about that. And I encourage everyone to read our coverage on that. But the Dave Stubbs column with Brian Trottier and him talking about playing baseball with Clark Gillies, I thought that was really good, Sean.
Unbelievable. He's an unbelievable athlete. Like, yeah. he was signed by the Houston Astros. could have played professional baseball and he decided he wanted to play hockey, and we're all better for it, you know. And you say fight and score, like, that wasn't what Clark wanted to do. He wanted to score and he wanted to set people up. Like, he was a reluctant warrior. Yeah. Nobody, once they pushed him to that point, they became reluctant. He only had to fight a guy once, unless it was Terry O'Reilly, who was crazy, and they fought four times. And, you know, and Dave Stubbs talked to Terry O'Reilly about it. And he was like, that's just what was expected then. That was what I had to do. That was what he had to do. It was a different time. But nobody went to that well twice, unless they absolutely had to.
Yeah. Sounds like never really had a chance to meet him. It sounds like a great man. Obviously a huge loss for the Long Island community, the Islanders community, and certainly the hockey community at large, but we'll leave it there. Sean, again, I'm happy we got a chance to sit down with Henrik Lundqvist and hear from him, because we know now how much this honor Friday night really means to him.
Yeah, no, I'm glad we did too. And one last note before we go, next week, All-Star game, right? Next weekend. It's becoming so close. I can't wait to go to Vegas. We're going to be there. We're going to do our first on-site podcast at the rink, quasi-live. It's not going to be live, but we're going to tape it live. Live to tape, I guess, is what they say in the radio business. We'll be at the Fanfare at the Convention Center on Thursday night. Bad job by our producer, Bob Bender, giving us the late shift. In Vegas, of all places. But
I'm going to say it was out of his control.
But yeah. We're professionals. We're going to pull it together. We'll just delay whatever we're going to do on the strip till later. We're going to have tons of guests, plus us, plus you, if you're there. Stop by, say hello, ask some questions. We're going to be broadcasting at the Fanfare all day, all the various podcasts. At the rink, we'll be there, of course. Darren Millard will be there with the Chirp, and the Fantasy Boys will be there doing a fantasy/gambling one. And what's better in Vegas than that? So stop by at Fanfare on Thursday. It's a great time. The Stanley Cup will be there, all kinds of other stuff. It's always one of the highlights of any big event for me to do, because there's so much there as a hockey geek to geek out on. And as an added bonus, you'll have us. So make sure you stop by and say hello.
Well, you just sold it for me. I'll be there. I mean, I have to be there, but you know, I'd be there anyway, even if I didn't have to be. So definitely encourage you to come out for that. Hope you enjoyed the interview with Lundqvist and this one. And until next week, when we are live to tape from Las Vegas, enjoy the hockey.